Good afternoon. I'm sorry to disappoint Fred, but it's not Simon talking, I'm afraid it's me. So I'm going to talk about some music transcription work from my master's project last year. Just to go over what music transcription is. So a musical signal might look something a bit like this. So this is just a time domain signal. It's going to be roughly periodic, and it's going to have a whole set of sinusoidal components, each with a different time-varying amplitude. But that's not how we perceive music, is it? This is what we sort of think of. We think of a load of notes, and then some other high-level properties, such as the expression and the timbre of the instruments and so on. So what we'd like is a system that can take something like this and turn it into something like this. Now, that's quite an ambitious thing to do in one step, so we're going to aim for a sort of intermediate result, something like this. This is known as piano roll. So we've got the pitch of the notes up the side here and time along the bottom and the line indicating which notes are present. And this is from some earlier work of Simon's, just on single note modelling. So what I'm going to do is just talk about our sequential framework for doing this note estimation. And then I'll talk about the models that we're using. So we've got a likelihood model using Poisson point processes, and then some simple dynamic models for the note evolution. And then I'll talk about some MCMC schemes and show some results. So first of all, our music is a continuous signal, and we want to look at frequency domain models. So the first thing we're going to do is to chop it up into frames, and we'll reference the frames with this subscript T here. And then for each frame, we'd like to estimate the set of notes present, which we'll call theta t for now, given the data that we've got for that frame, which we'll call yt. And the way we can do this is by looking at this joint posterior over the notes in the current frame and the previous frame. And you'll recognize this from the previous talk. It's exactly the same method. So we can expand this. We'll have three terms, a likelihood term here, a transition density term, and then this posterior term from the previous processing step. So if you imagine this with t minus 1 and t minus 2, then this is just a marginal of that. So if we've got a particle output from the previous frame, we can just marginalize that. So let's start off by looking at the models that we're using for the likelihood term. So I mentioned we're going to use frequency domain models. So this is just a short time Fourier transform of one of the frames. And you'll see that what we're interested in here is this set of peaks down here. And there's a lot of redundant information down here in the noise floor. So the first thing we're going to do is throw that all away. So we'll run just a peak detection algorithm. This is very simple. We're just looking at the first order difference and then putting a median threshold on it. So we reduce the spectrum down to just this set of red circled peaks here. Now, what we'd like to model is both the frequency and the amplitude. It turns out that the amplitude of these peaks is dependent on an awful lot of factors, including the instrument that's playing and the recording environment, and also they're very vary over time. So putting together simple and robust models is difficult. So we're going to start off by just looking at a model for the frequencies of the set of peaks there. If we have one note playing in our frame, then what we see characteristically is a peak at some fundamental frequency. That's the lowest peak here, and we'll denote that F naught for the fundamental. And then we see a set of peaks at overtones or partial frequencies, which is this setup here. And they're approximately integer multiples of the fundamental. But we don't always get a peak in all these locations. For example, there's one missing here, and we don't know how many of them they'll be, how high we have to go up. In addition, we're going to get some clutter peaks up here, and these are going to be due to noise or transient effects, which we're not really modeling, or other non-musical sounds in the recording. So if we have a lot of notes present in the frame, we end up with a horrible data association issue, where we'd like to link every peak with either one of the notes present or a clutter process. That gives us some horrible scaling in complexity as we increase the number of notes or the number of overtones. So we can get around this by using a Poisson process assumption about the generation of peaks in our spectrum. So we assume that for each overtone, the peaks are generated in the spectrum according to a Poisson process, and we can construct an intensity function for this Poisson process, which has a maximum at the expected frequency of the overtone. Now, this is quite a significant assumption. Generally, we only expect to see no peaks or one peak, or maybe in some rare cases, some sort of split peak. Now, with this assumption, we're going to have a Poisson distribution for the number of peaks at that overtone. That's the bad thing. The good thing is that because of the union property of Poisson processes, we could just add the intensity functions for each overtone to give us an intensity function like this for the whole note as a Poisson process. And you can see we constructed this with a very narrow, large components at the fundamental, showing that we're pretty certain there's going to be a peak there, and we're quite sure of what frequency it'll be at. And then we've got broader, smaller components at the high frequencies, where we're less certain of exactly what frequency the peak will occur at. And then if we have more than one note present, we can just add these intensity functions together for all the different notes, and that'll give us a Poisson process for all the peaks in our spectrum. So just to give you some maths, we've been using a Gaussian mixture model to construct these note intensity functions, and then we're just adding them together to give the entire frame intensity function, and then adding on a little bit extra uniformly to account for those clutter peaks, so that's the clutter Poisson process. And then once we've got this, we can calculate a likelihood expression for the frame. So just integrating the intensity function over each bin of the fast Fourier transform, that'll give us an expectation of for the presence of a peak in that bin. And then we can just calculate a likelihood value like this, just from Poisson distribution, and then multiply them all together to give the total frame likelihood. Now, I said earlier that the overtones occur approximately at integer multiples of the fundamental, and it turns out that for especially for stringed instruments, the overtones tend to spread out at higher frequencies. So we've been using a model for this inharmonicity, according to this formula taken from this paper. And this introduces another parameter that we're going to have to estimate, which is this B here, which is an inharmonicity parameter for each note. So the things that we have to estimate are now adding up. So that theta that we had earlier, if we take this to be the set of all the parameters we need to estimate, we've got n, the number of notes, and then for each note, a fundamental frequency, the number of partials, and also an inharmonicity. Okay, moving on to the transition density term. Now, we've been using some very simple models for these so far, and they've been based on two quite basic observations. So firstly, that if a note is present in one frame, then it's likely that that note is also present in the next frame. And secondly, that if there's a certain number of notes present in one frame, then it's likely that we'll have the same number of notes in the next frame. And obviously, there are far more higher levels of modeling that we could do here, looking at how the number of partial frequencies change between frames, so you'd expect that to decay. And also modeling note onsets and offsets, we haven't looked at either as well yet. But we've now got everything we need to do some inference. So this is the thing we're trying to estimate, remember? And we've defined our model for the likelihood, that's the Poisson model, and we've got our nice simple models for the transition density. So now we're going to use the MCMC particles algorithm, which Ludmilla mentioned in the last talk, to estimate this joint density. Now, the problem is that if we've got a large number of notes, then we've got quite a lot of parameters now. So we've got three parameters for each note, remember? Which means if we try and change all of them at once, we end up with very low acceptance rates in our Markov chain. So the way we get around this, for a start, we're going to have two sorts of move. We're going to have moves where we only try and change the the current frame parameters, and then other moves where we try and change both the previous frame and the current frame parameters. For the current frame, it's nice and easy. We can just use Metropolis within Gibbs and just choose to only change some subsets of the parameters at once. So we'll just change the three parameters associated with one note in each step. For the joint moves, it gets a little more complex. What we'd like to do is sample our theta t minus 1 from the particle distribution from the previous frame, and then propose the current frame parameters from some proposal. So the problem here is that when we do this sampling, we'd be changing all our theta t minus 1 parameters in one go. And again, that gives us these very low acceptance rates. So our solution to this has been to take the particle distribution and sort of collapse it onto a single univariate histogram for all the different possible notes that we have in the previous frame. And then we use this to as an approximation for the marginal distribution of each note, and assume the notes are independent at t minus 1. And this means that we can sample one note at a time at the theta t minus 1 parameters. And that, again, gives us acceptable acceptance rates. So finally, we wanted to estimate the number of notes present in each frame, and that can be done very nicely just by putting the whole thing into a reversible jump formulation. So let's have a look at some results. So this is the output from a couple of Markov chains. This is a simple case where we just got one note, and we're not looking at reversible jump here, so we're fixing the number of notes at one at the bottom here. And you can see that it picks up the correct note on the first iteration, in fact, here. And the other parameters, I'm not sure if you can see that green very nicely, but it's sort of takes about 20 frames to stabilize. And then here on the right, we've got a three-note case, and we're doing reversible jump MCMC now. So we're estimating the number of notes here, and there's so it gets that pretty much correct. With the frequencies here, we see it picks two of the notes correctly very quickly, and then it struggles to choose between three possibilities here. And the three cases are, in fact, spaced an octave apart. And the reason that there's some confusion there is because the three notes have pretty much the same set of overtone of partial frequencies. So finally, just a few results. This is a simple sort of lab test piece. So it's just three chords, each of three notes. So we've got time along the bottom here, and then the frequency of the notes present up the y-axis. And the blue dots here indicate the note estimates. And we can see that it picks up all of the notes quite nicely here. This third one, this middle one just dropping out here as the overtones decay at the end of the note. Few errors here occur at the beginning of each note, and these are caused by transient effects at the beginning of the note, which we're not modeling at the moment. And then finally, we tried it on some real music. So this is a piano piece. And you see it picks up the bass notes quite nicely. For the treble notes, it's doing a fair job up here. There's a lot of false alarms and sort of clutter going on. And again, that's due to some transient effects at the beginning of each note, which we're not modeling well at the moment. The overlaid orange is the ground truth. So just to conclude, I've outlined the Poisson point process model, which we're using to give us a likelihood value for each frame given the notes, and some simple dynamic models that for the evolution of the notes over time. And these have allowed us to do sequential inference using the MCMC particles algorithm to find the number of notes in each frame and estimates of their frequencies and other parameters. So there's lots of ways we could extend this. So I mentioned earlier that we weren't going to look at peak amplitudes because that was too hard. So we could almost certainly get some nice performance if we looked at them. And also the phase data, we haven't looked at all yet. And also by looking at some more complex dynamical models. However, given the simplicity of them, it seems to be working quite well for now. Thank you.
Questions? Have time?
Yep. How essential is time in terms of processing? Do you have to complete a description in some kind of quasi-real time or not?
It's quite a long way off real time at the moment. It's.
I know, but in a typical application, would you expect it to very quickly, or it's fine that you do it with condition processing?
We haven't been aiming to get it real time at the moment.
No, but what I'm aiming at is if you would propose a kind of smoothing to improve the result, do you think you would expect to get improved results before the demand?
Yes, I think so.
And I was about to add, the simple peak detection. Like, is it possible to find a better features for the nodes, than the simple peak detection? Because it's quite can be quite noisy. At least the spiky noises can be eliminated from the spectrum, maybe. So, did you try such things or stuff?
Sorry, I can't quite hear you.
You're feeding your algorithm with the measurements as the peak detections, and the peaks that you are detecting, right?
Yep.
And why is it better to find the peaks, for example, after some smoothing to get rid of this noisy spikes and stuff?
There is actually some smoothing in the peak detection, so it's doing a short average first, and then.
Okay, so it's already there. Then I was thinking that the errors in the higher frequency might be cause of these phenomena, maybe.
Yeah, there's a trade-off between if you put too much averaging in, then it loses some of the real
peaks.
Definitely.
Uh-huh.
So it's got just a very short one at the moment, which seems to give pretty good performance.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Have you thought about having a maximum number of basically nodes, and then picking a subset from those? Let's say you have you assign 5 nodes. And then you pick a subset of those 5, so you have, let's say, 1 node, 2 node, 3 node, and so you, instead of, incorporating a multiple model particle filter, that would switch between all those different combinations, and would that be, better, or have you thought about it, or something like that?
I think another of Simon's students has done something along those lines.
I think it should be equivalent in some sense, to the extent that you're imposing an artificial limit on the number of nodes, whereas the reverse of the jump framework can, in principle, go up to the number of nodes, although, of course, that will never happen.
Okay, thank you very much.